Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actress Becky Flom talks about when she discovered she was accidentally pregnant.
The upside is you have the libido of a 15-year-old boy at summer camp. It is great when you're in a relationship. Women with PCOS commonly have trouble conceiving. They need specialists and procedures. So we knew if we wanted kids, big if, we'd have to plan it out.
Today on the show, actress Becky Flom talks about becoming accidentally pregnant. Plus, we talk a lot about her producing reality TV. Stay close.
Hey, it's Becky Flom, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the story last week. Becky Flom, I don't know if you heard this or not, but it was a story by Jamie Reedy. Did you happen to listen to that?
I missed that one. I listened to the one before, the Teresa Ho one.
Oh, Teresa Ho. It's Teresa Lowe.
Lowe. Oh, my gosh. About being a sugar baby.
Yeah, that's good, right?
What a universe.
Wonderful story. And she was so open. I really appreciated like her, you know, not just her honesty, but just like her point of view. I thought it was really good. You know, I haven't really heard that side of things, as it were.
Yeah, me neither. I didn't know anything about it.
So go back and listen to Teresa Lowe, but also go back and listen to Jamie Reedy. That story was last week. Jamie Reedy is a writer, but he also used to be a Viagra salesman.
What?
Like, he was one of the first, in the very beginning, there was like 100 original Pfizer reps, and he was one of those guys. So he writes a book, and then it gets picked up and made into a Jake Gyllenhaal movie, I know, called Love and Other Drugs.
Oh, yeah, I remember that movie.
Okay, right. So James Reedy was on the show and talking all about the Viagra.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to go back and listen to
it. That's a good story. It really is. But not today, you guys. Don't go away now, because I am here with writer and actress Becky Flom, and she brings forth the topic accidental pregnancy. It's like all right there, you know, in the title.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because
it ties in well with Viagra, kind of, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. But it's accidental pregnancy. Like, it's so funny how much of my life I spent trying to not get pregnant.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I took it very seriously. Not only was I on the pill for, you know, God knows how long, but also I had that Norplant implanted, which is like those little rods.
Oh,
that
whoa.
You get implanted in the top of your arm, like, you know, underneath your arm. And they kind of fan out like little sticks. And I had them for 5 years, and you don't get pregnant. I mean, it's 99.99% pregnant, you know, guaranteed. And I don't get pregnant, of course. And after 5 years, you have to get it taken out. And
sure.
Then I had it put right back in, like a new set of them. So I had that in my arm for 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I was really...
You were very committed.
...serious about not getting pregnant.
Yeah.
And when I was married to my ex-husband, when we decided to pull the goalie, we got pregnant, like, just like that.
Mm.
It was really exciting, and it was kind of purposeful. I like that sex. I remember specifically thinking, like, we are going to try to procreate, if you can imagine.
It's that kind of sex is not sexy to me. Is the opposite, where you're both like, we have a job to do.
Right.
But that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm just, you know, I didn't get pregnant until I was 40. So I waited. And so it was very, you know, it was very exciting.
That is exciting.
Having been on birth control for minimum 20 years, probably 23 years.
Sure.
So then all of a sudden you're not. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Without giving too much away from the story,
yeah.
We're finding ourselves right now in a situation where we're trying.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And it's tough.
It can be such a stressful time. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. It can. It's a lot tougher than.
Yeah, I got lucky.
It happened by accident.
Yeah, I got very lucky. But anyway, accidental pregnancy, I'm anxious to hear your story. But before we get to Becky's story, I did want to remind you guys to head over to storyworthypodcast.com. Just do that, okay? And then I won't even bother telling you about all the social media stuff because you know, and I know, and it's a hassle, but that's what we do. That is what we do. And I would be remiss not to mention my other podcast, Screwed Up Stories with comedian Rachel O'Brien. She and I are just having a blast. And women specifically are coming on and telling their screwed up stories. Becky, you have to listen. Honestly, every story is funnier than the one before. I'm so proud of it. It's really great. And we're over on Westwood One Podcast. So you can find it wherever you find podcasts. You know, the regular places like Apple Podcasts, etc. In fact, if you go over to Apple Podcasts, you know what I want you to do. You know what's important to me. I can't help it. I did not make the rules. But what is important, it's just the way it is, Becky. You got to rate, subscribe, and review. That's the game that's being played.
Yeah, that's the way you got to do it.
You got to do it. So do it for Screwed Up Stories and do it for Storyworthy. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right, you guys, she's here right now, Becky Flom. She's an actress and a storyteller, and she daylights as a reality show associate producer. So you can't just say that and stop. I mean, so tell me more about that.
So it was just sort of funny how I got into that. I went to NYU and I got my master's in documentary filmmaking, sort of the journalism side of it. And then when I was living in New York, I got a job as a working as a production associate for a daytime talk show, a medical daytime talk show.
That was people it like Dr. Oz or something. I see. She's saying yes.
Yes, it was. I don't know the rules of saying when you, so I worked for Dr. Oz and then I was like, LA is calling to me. So I came out here and my first job was taking notes on a cooking channel show. And then from there, I just go.
How did you get that? You just put a resume in
through a friend. She was like, I'm the supervising producer of this kid's cooking show. Like, do you want to come on?
That's great.
So it was great. And then from there, I got on with the reality show that I've worked the most on, which is like a house reality show about reality show stars.
Wait, what's it called?
And it's called Marriage Boot Camp Reality Stars.
Okay.
And
Marriage Boot Camp Reality Stars. Wow. Okay.
it was a really fun show to work on. Don't worry, you'll hear more about it.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
And I just sort of, and then I, after I had my son, worked another show or two in post-production. But I really enjoy it because it's kind of writing and it can be creative.
Absolutely.
But it's like, it's really, it can also be very fun and also make you feel very dirty.
Interesting.
And cheap and terrible.
Interesting. Because I would think that there'd be like a cohesiveness amongst the other writers and employees on the set, right?
Well, no one's writing per se.
Okay.
It's more producing.
Producing
people
sure,
to do.
That's a creative to its end, isn't it?
Yeah, in a way.
What was the dirty part?
You're definitely manipulating people. Now, I never had to do that. I didn't spend a lot of time with the actual talent.
Right.
But I always saw how people were being manipulated in the control room. And I saw, you know, what was being said and producers would pull talent aside and say, hey, you need to say this or whatever. Yeah. And then you're like...
So they've already sort of written a script loosely on the people involved they might want it to go.
It's not so much script writing. You're kind of doing it on the fly. I mean, it's very cool. It's sort of improv in a way. You see two people that don't seem to really like each other, so you figure out ways to keep putting them together.
Right,
and
right.
Put them in situations.
It is so manipulative.
Sure. I mean, they wrote a whole scripted show about it, Unreal, on Lifetime.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. I love it.
So it's called Unreal. Yeah. I'm going to see that.
It's from I think the creator is a woman who worked on The Bachelor for a couple of seasons. It's crazy. Now, nothing crazy like that ever happened to me, but like some of the tricks of the trade are there.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, in reality show, it's just gotten like, it's so pervasive. It's just part of regular TV now. It used to be called reality shows, and now it's just TV.
Well, yeah, and I think people know that reality shows aren't real.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people don't know that.
That's so disappointing.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people don't know that. Or if they know, they don't care. I don't know. Anyway, you've done a lot of great stuff, and you have a solo show called Hopeless Romantic Comedy about your misadventures as a delusional dater with a passion for Nora Ephron movies, and that was called Hilarious and Cathartic by the New York Times. That must have been exciting.
That was exciting. I didn't even know they saw the show until someone else pointed it out to me.
I hope I get an email like that some morning. You know, good morning, Christine. Guess what? We love your show. You didn't even pitch it to us, but we listened on our own.
Yeah, it was that's crazy. That's amazing.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And most recently, you guys, you have seen Becky on True TV's Laugh Mob Laugh Tracks. And you guys can find Becky over on Twitter at Becky Flom, which is fantastic. BeckyFlaum. What a great handle.
Yeah.
Good on you.
I was very lucky.
All right, you guys, whoever you are, put your hands together for Becky Flom.
So I'm a planner. I love to make a plan. I love lists, calendars, spreadsheets. I actually really liked a lot about planning my wedding because it involved like all those things. So many spreadsheets. But at the same time, I'm really shit at making a big decision. So I can plan a wedding, but deciding what the color scheme of that wedding will be nearly broke me. There have been moments in my life where I've just wished that the universe would tell me what to do. If I could make this ball of trash into the trash can, we're going to move to London. You know, that sort of thing. I was always looking for a set of circumstances that would point to an inevitable conclusion. I somehow didn't see this as a loss of control. It's just gentle guidance from the universe. I planned my 35th birthday party for a month. I mean, I went all out for this party. It was 90s themed. I made Zima. I made homemade Zima. I went online. I bought Japanese soda to make this Zima because they don't sell Zima anymore. I made homemade Dunkaroos. I made bagel bites. I got like 90s candy and I made a playlist. I had like a slideshow. People came in costume, you know, dressed like My So-Called Life and Daria. I wore a choker. So, but after only two drinks, I vomited for 30 minutes in the bathroom and passed out at 10:30 before some guests even arrived. Something had gone wrong, but that whole summer had gone wrong. At the beginning of the summer, I was working as the associate story producer of a relatively well-known basic cable reality show about reality show couples trying to make their relationships work. It was the human centipede of television. The show taped for about 2.5 grueling weeks at a mansion in Laurel Canyon, and I worked the night shift. So I came in around 1 or 2 in the afternoon. I left at 1 or 2 at night, and I really liked this shift because it gave me time during the day to do what I needed to do, go to auditions and meetings and stuff, and also the house was so empty at night except for the talent. And it was just like me and another producer and the audio guy, and really fucked up shit happens after midnight in those houses because they give them lots of alcohol. And it's just like cuckoo crazy town, which is kind of fun, but also at times a little scary. So as much as I love the emptiness at the mansion at 3 a.m., I really hated the walk up to my car at night. In previous seasons, when I had worked on the show, we parked off campus or off set, and we had a shuttle bus. But this season, we had to climb this really steep dirt road to this horse corral, and that's where everybody parked. So one afternoon, I was coming down the hill to go to work, and I'd had an audition that morning, and I was really feeling like life is on track. I'm making good money at this job that's only temporary. I'm still going out on auditions. It was one of those days where I really felt like life's plan is working. I had just gotten married. We had a cute apartment in Echo Park. We had a dog. I mean, we talked about kids, but not really seriously. And, you know, maybe. And even though I was almost 35, we just like weren't in any rush. We were planning this big trip to South America. And after that, we said, okay, we'll get serious. We'll have a real conversation. But I'd been on two auditions that week. I had written a web series that I was going to star in. I was crushing the game. My career was finally going to be my focus this year. I mean, how could I become a mom until I became successful? I was really feeling myself as I walked down the hill when I slipped in the dirt. My ankle buckled under me and I slid down the hill, and I knew immediately it was broken because I heard it break. It was super gross. And I was trying to play it off, and there was a gardener on the grounds and he came to help me, and I was so embarrassed. I was just like, no, get away. I'm fine. And then when I got up to try to walk, I was like, well, I can't walk. But I come from a walk it off family. I come from a family that's like, tough it out. Just like live your life with broken bones, which I had done when I was 8. I walked around on a broken foot for 2 days before anyone took me to the doctor. But the set medic took a look at it and he sent me straight to urgent care, where they confirmed that my ankle was broken. And they fitted me with a boot and gave me some pain meds and sent me home. I insisted that I was going to be on set the next day, because all I did was really sit in a control room anyway and listen and take notes and write interview questions and stuff. So since this happened at work, I was also at the mercy of workers' comp insurance. Now, the upside is you get paid for days that you had to miss from work, but they're also in charge of your care, which means you can't see a doctor without them approving this doctor or assigning you to this doctor. A week went by and no one had assigned me a doctor. And my leg was really hurting me. It was swollen. And despite all the ibuprofen I was taking, I was still like in pain and uncomfortable. And it felt like I needed to stretch all the time or massage my leg. And so I decided I wanted to find my own doctor. You aren't supposed to do this. Right. And I would just like to say that I did not find my own doctor because I don't want to go to insurance prison. But I did contact someone who wanted to see my x-rays. And so I had to go to urgent care to pick them up because they were on film. And my husband, who had to drive me around because I had broken my right ankle, my driving ankle, he's like Mr. Cautious. So he's like, I'm more of a person who leaps and then looks. He looks both ways. Then he takes tiny baby steps. He's very safe. If he could wrap me in bubble wrap for the rest of my life, he would. Hmm. He's never broken a bone. He's never had one stitch. I spent my childhood in and out of doctors and hospitals because I was born with a rare birth defect that affected my upper respiratory system. So to me, like, you only go to the doctor if you're dying. So I told the urgent care doctor about how my leg was still in pain, and he kind of poked at it, and he compared the swollen leg to the other leg. And then I just was like making polite conversation. I was like, on top of everything else, I'm getting a cold because it's so cold in the control room, and I'm coughing. And when I said that, he stood straight up.
Oh, boy.
His face went white, and he ran out of the room. And I have only seen doctors run like that in movies. And I kind of looked at my husband, and I was like, what's going on? He comes back, and he has, like, a map and some pamphlets. And he's like, look, the ER down the street knows you're coming because I'm pretty sure you have a blood clot and a possible pulmonary embolism. This is very serious, and they're going to treat you like a gunshot victim. But don't let that scare you. And all I kept thinking was, so I'm going to be late to work? So I did have a blood clot in my calf that had traveled and broken up, and it was in my lungs, which was the really dangerous part, because people die very quickly from pulmonary embolisms. I was immediately admitted to the hospital and put on blood thinners and painkillers. I should mention here about my secret crippling fear of blood clots. I developed this fear after reading Love is a Mixtape by Rolling Stone writer Rob Sheffield. And he talks about his first wife passing away. This quirky, kind of chubby young lady who died suddenly of a pulmonary embolism.
Yeah.
Since then, I'm so strict about, like, I have to get up and walk around on planes. I drink plenty of water. If I'm sitting for too long, I get up and move. So the doctor, who, by the way, took an entire day to come and see me in the hospital, said, oh, you're fine now. And then he said, and I quote, if you were going to die, you already would have. So that didn't really sit well with my husband. My husband, who had never been inside of a hospital for more than an hour. And see, I always imagined the first time that I spent the night at the hospital with my husband would be like the birth of a child, or like when we were very old, holding hands in a hospital bed, like in The Notebook. We were there for a whole week while they monitored my blood. They took samples of my blood every 4 hours. I was a human pincushion. The doctor said the blood clot was a result of the trauma from the ankle injury, plus being sedentary, plus being on birth control. So they took me off the birth control and they put me on blood thinners, like prescription, like Xarelto. I wasn't concerned about the birth control pills because I was only really on them because I was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, more commonly known as PCOS. It's a hormone imbalance where basically your body produces a little too much testosterone and it prevents you from ovulating. The upside is you have the libido of a 15-year-old boy at summer camp. So you're just, I'm always wanting it. It is great when you're in a relationship. Women with PCOS commonly have trouble conceiving. They need specialists and procedures. Sometimes people have miscarriages, additional hormones. So we knew if we wanted kids, big if, we'd have to plan it out, as the financial outlay alone on stuff like that is pretty tremendous. The rest of that summer was a series of lovely friends giving me rides to doctor's appointments and running errands. One friend even took me to Disneyland. And one night, I just decided after a summer of being trapped, I was going to have the best birthday ever at the end of August. Which brings me back to this party. Now, I'm a lightweight, but I'm not so much of a lightweight that two homemade Zimas could knock me out. My husband thought, well, maybe you shouldn't have been drinking on blood thinners. Good point. Mm-hmm. But maybe also I didn't eat enough Dunkaroos. There's also that. So the next few weeks, I was a little more careful when I drank. I mean, I drank, but I just was finding it so hard to recover from a night out. And I was like, fucking 35, man, kicking my ass. And one day I was at work kind of bemoaning this. I was like, I've had a hangover for 3 days. And this girl I work with was like, well, maybe you're pregnant. And she was baby crazy at the time. And I was like, you just got pregnancy on the brain, girl. And she was like, I don't know. And a few days later, when I still hadn't started my period, I went to a coffee bean and tea leaf with a pregnancy test, because that's where you get real privacy mm-hmm. for big moments. And sure enough, there was a faint pink second line. Dare I call it baby pink? And I was in utter denial. I was like, well, I Googled it. I was like, this is a fluke. I peed wrong. This isn't happening. But sure enough, Google was like, you pregnant, girl. It's a strange thing to accidentally be pregnant at 35, because to the outside observer, it is totally normal and a cause for celebration. A married woman in her 30s with a job gets pregnant. I had a hard time with the idea that while this big decision had all been made for me, I also felt I had no plan and I had no control over my circumstances. This didn't feel like gentle guidance from the universe. It felt like being pushed off a cliff, or rather being pushed down a hill in Laurel Canyon. I needed to be more successful so that I could get back to a career after having a baby, not restart a career all over again. I needed to be thinner so that I wouldn't have so much baby weight to lose. I needed to be so sure of who I was that I wouldn't get lost in motherhood. My son was born May 21st, 2016, and his birth, shockingly, did not go according to plan, and neither is much of the last 2.5 years. They say man plans, God laughs, but for me, it's mom plans, toddler laughs. Honestly, being a mom has made me more of who I am. I've been able to honestly look at how I spend my time and focus it more. I'm probably more ambitious than I've ever been in my whole life. And now, nearly 3 years later, we're trying to have another baby, and it is completely different. We're facing today what we thought we'd be facing nearly 4 years ago: numerous doctors, fertility tests, a miscarriage. And as crazy as it sounds, it makes me miss not having a plan. And it makes me very thankful for that steep hill in Laurel Canyon.
Yay! Aw, that's a sweet story.
Thank you.
Just an adorable story. It's so nice to see a mom so happy because it's hard being a mom. It's not an easy job at all, but you're really seeing, you know, you're really being appreciative of the moments.
It definitely took me a while. It was a journey to get to where I am today about being a mom because my husband's really great about... He's so adaptive. Like, he's really flexible. When we moved from New York, it took me like a year to really like adjust to Los Angeles.
Sure.
My husband walked in our apartment and was like, "I love LA. It's my home forever now." And I, meanwhile, was like in the corner wringing my hands being like, "Why isn't there any public transportation?" You know.
Really? Is that right? Because I'm like your husband. When I got here, I knew I would never leave. But you were so used to the East Coast, I guess.
Yeah. And I, well, all my friends were there. I was, you know, and it was my choice. I was the one who instigated the whole move. So then when I found out I was pregnant, my husband was like, "Oh, cool, I'm going to be a dad." And I spent most of my pregnancy being like, "Oh, my God, I'm going to be a mom. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I'm going to become like all those moms that are so terrible and that I hate. Oh, my God." You know, like I spent a lot of that.
Wait, what moms do you hate? You mean because of what you've seen on reality TV?
Yeah.
Are they usually moms, those reality stars?
I mean, they have. There's this new show. I'm totally going to watch it called Yummy Mummies. It's on Netflix.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like really super rich pregnant ladies from Australia.
Oh, wow. And they live in a house together?
Well, no, I think it's like more like a Real Housewives vibe where they follow their lives.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's get to the real question. What is the, you have to have something called PCOS in order to get what medicine to have that libido?
Okay. No, PCOS is what gives you the libido.
Well, so what is that? It's called the illness.
Yeah, it's polycystic ovarian syndrome. They don't really know where it comes from. They suspect it's genetic. My sister had it as well. Or has it. And it's just sort of like how your body produces, breaks down sugars. But instead of, it's like a cousin of diabetes.
Oh my gosh, you mean the sexy cousin? I mean,
it's the sexy cousin of diabetes that doesn't let you ovulate, but you want a bone all the time.
Interesting. Wow. That, I had never heard of that before.
Yeah.
and so I want to go back to this reality TV thing. These mansions that the people live in, you know, during the taping of the show, these are just empty buildings. Am I right?
I think the one where we shot that season, I think, was like a... Not, I don't want to say Airbnb because the set designers brought in all their own furniture.
Sure.
But definitely people, it was like someone's vacation home or something. I think that's
what. Nobody was living there.
No, we weren't sharing the space with the people that own the house.
Sure. And so, but when you're doing the reality shows, do the people stay in that house or do they often, they are staying in the house?
Yes.
So how many bedrooms are we talking about?
Oh my gosh. Let's see, there were five couples, so at least five bedrooms.
Yeah.
But I feel like there probably were more that we weren't using.
And that was the one called Marriage
Boot Camp.
Marriage Boot Camp.
What's Reality Stars.
Is it basically like listening to couples' problems and stuff?
Yeah. And it's, you know, they play games and the hosts at the time, I don't know what they, I haven't worked on the show in a while, but the hosts at the time were this couple, and it was sort of, they took the religion out for the show, but they ran it from their church.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so a lot of it was like games, like one of the games was, you know, they had to build an IKEA bed together.
Yeah.
And one person had to read the instructions.
The other one has to listen. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. And then they kind of see like, oh, those people seem to work really well together and that, you know, and they also work. One of the things that was great about this show is that they help people work through some individual traumas, which I found incredibly compelling.
Did they shoot that as well?
Yes.
I see. And so when you're on set as a producer and you're listening and you're trying to kind of piece together what you can make into a plot line, essentially.
Storyline. Yeah,
a storyline. And then do you pick your favorite people, I guess, of course, and highlight their issues because they're more interesting or better to look at. Or
well, I think
they
you
speak well.
It's not so much your favorite people; it's who's got the most going on.
I see.
You know, you could have a couple with their only real issue is, oh, we're just not good at communication. But you have this other couple that they've been cheating on each other and there is an illegitimate child or there's a this and that.
That was reality gold.
Right, right. So like maybe couple that just doesn't communicate well doesn't get as much screen time.
Yeah, I guess so, man. And so do people that are working in reality TV, do you think they also love reality TV or is it just a paycheck? Because I find it be very hard to love reality TV.
I don't know. I can't really speak to that. Like, I don't feel like
But do you watch reality TV at home? You said you're going to watch that one thing.
Only one episode. But, like, what I find funny is I have friends that write television, that make really funny television shows, that all they watch is reality television.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
That's crazy to me. But maybe it's just, I mean, writing comedy is your job. You need an escape, too.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. I mean, everybody has their different things, what they enjoy.
I just never really, like, I guess there were some reality shows I was super into, but...
Yeah. Hey, listen, so maybe you'll get pregnant now accidentally.
I don't know.
I mean, you could.
Possibly.
If you still have that libido and you guys are still doing it all the time with the baby.
Well,
around.
Now it's like... calendars. It's the whole like I have
really?
A calendar.
That takes away. That does take away from the.
It does take away some of the magic.
And then you have a baby around, so it's tough.
Yeah, you kind of have to. Nap time is a very.
Well, I'm glad you had the baby. I mean, you know, you never will be there. There is never going to be like, you know, if I accrue this much money or success, then I'll have the baby, and then everything will be perfect because life will throw you, you know, any number of things you're in your path, and everything changes anyway.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest lessons of being a mom is like, just. Adapting is adapting to being a mom, adapting to the kind of kid you have.
Yeah.
Because I think you can imagine like, oh, this is the kind of kid I'll have. And my kid will do this and this and that. Well, they won't. They're going to be the exact opposite of this, this and that.
You know, like, well, maybe, maybe not.
Well, you know what I mean?
No,
like
it could be.
You never know what they're going to like. Toddlers especially, my son one day will like love chicken.
Right.
And then the next day, he hates chicken. Yeah. Well, what's... Okay.
Yeah. It's just maddening. Being a parent is definitely the hardest job ever. And it's also, you know, super rewarding. But I only have one child and I'm super happy about that. Because it seems that you get more than one. It just gets so complicated. And also the volume in the house goes up.
Oh, yeah,
sometimes
sure.
When we're at a friend's houses, I'll say, Alabama, listen. You hear that? You hear all that fighting? You hear all that going on? We don't have that. How great is that? Really?
Well, my husband was an only child. Mm-hmm. So he kind of is very... I have an older sister and we're very, very close. And so in my head, I'm like, well, I want to give... my son that.
Yeah.
But I can't predict if we do have another kid, like what that relationship
you never
that
know.
They're going to have is. And my...
But it's exciting. You're young. Have another baby. It's a great time, Becky.
We'll
do it all, man. TV's not going anywhere. And reality TV, unfortunately, isn't budging at all.
No, it isn't. Sometimes I miss it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Well, you know, the camaraderie, hanging out,
laughing
with people.
With adults. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Being with adults is... I worked on a show last year, just in post-production and editing a show. And, oh my gosh, it was so great. It was really hard to juggle because my husband travels a lot. And so I was trying to juggle all sorts of childcare and all this stuff. And, of course, everything happened that could have in that 6 weeks. But it was nice to like go somewhere and be with the grown-ups and talk about grown-up things and not talk about potty training or preschool or whatever.
Yeah. No, I understand. But my girl's like 12 years old now and I look back and It's all just a blip. I mean, I know everybody says that, but it's true. Like, it was so encompassing at the time. Like, sure. I thought, I will never not push this stroller around this goddamn block. I will push this stroller forever. I will never not have a car seat. That will never happen.
Right.
Like, you don't see it. And then all of a sudden, she's out of the car seat. She's out of the stroller. She's out of the, and they move on. And you become less significant. So that period of time is, in fact, so precious. And I know it sounds redundant, but people don't get that. And I see too many women running back to, you know, a lot of other things when they could try to maybe stay. I don't know. It gets political, I know, to say. But staying home with your child is, like, incredibly important.
It's hard. It's funny. Right around the time Michael turned one, I was at the grocery store with him. And he was great in grocery stores. He just, like, really enjoyed being in the... He still does enjoy a grocery store. But we were there, and I had just... We had had a bad day, I think. And the clerk, the cashier, was like, oh, you know, how old is he? And I was like, 1 year. And the guy was like, oh, man, it goes by fast. And I was like, no, it doesn't.
I know.
This year, I was like, this year has lasted 1,000 years.
I know.
And I'm exhausted, but I know what you mean.
And well, you're going to live 82 years, and this is two of them. No, seriously, that's kind of the way it's
course.
True. I mean, it's just, it's incredibly brief. It really is. But it's exciting.
My sister has this great saying. She says, the days are long, the years are short.
Aw, that's true.
And there are some days that I'm like, this day cannot get over fast enough.
Yeah.
And there are some days where I'm like, oh my gosh, I want this day to never... And it's funny how they are, because you, it's almost like a video game. Like, I've mastered this level of momming.
Right.
And just as you master that level of momming, they've moved on.
It's over.
And you're like, wait a minute. No. Come back to this part, because I'm really good at this part now.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited you're a mom. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
It's fun. And thanks for coming down to Story Smash when you come down.
Thank you. Thank you for having
fun, right?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I have so much fun.
Thank you.
Those shows are so fun.
Thank you very much. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Tweet Becky Flom over there on Twitter at Becky Flom, and then follow me as well at Storyworthy. And I want to thank the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, you're supporting me. Hooray. And if by chance you didn't hear a sponsor today, well, you probably heard one last week or next week, or you see them on my website, and you know what I'm getting at. Support my sponsors, would you? That really helps me. All right, you guys, on behalf one more time of the fantastic Becky Flom, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Very sweet story. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.